The 100 Years' War, the Duguesclin Period, English Situation, 1372 to 1373, Part 4, The Situation at Brest. Well, all the terrible tidings finally reached Westminster about the same time, in the middle of May 1373. Jean de Montfort must have arrived in England in early May. He was followed within days by Provana and Chaucer, returning empty-handed from Italy, and by the first reports of Portugal's repudiation of the English alliance. Suddenly the world seemed a very different place. On about May the 20th, John of Gaunt's plans, the land in Brittany, were abandoned. Not long afterwards, the Earl of Salisbury's force was recalled from Saint-Malo. Sir Nicholas Tamworth's army of Portugal, which was already beginning to gather at Southampton, was cancelled. Only the Portuguese ambassadors, Juan Fernandez Andero and his colleague, declined to recognize reality. They pressed on with the conclusion of the Anglo-Portuguese alliance, even after they knew that Fernando had allied himself with the King of Castile, and that Andero had been forbidden to return to Portugal, simply deleting the clause of the draft treaty, which provided for an English expeditionary force to operate in Portugal. The treaty was solemnly executed in that form in St. Paul's Cathedral in June, but it was a dead letter from the moment the seal was attached. It was never ratified. Within the limited number and low tonnage of the ships available, there could be no question of sending John of Gaunt's army to Gascony across the Bay of Biscay. He would now have to enter France through Calais. This meant that it would be necessary to reach Aquitaine by marching round the north and east of Paris, passing across the Massif Central, which is the only region where it was feasible for an English army to cross the Loire River. It also necessitated a change of embarkation port from Plymouth to Sandwich and Dover. These changes of plans caused chaos. At least 200 transports had been requisitioned for Gaunt's passage, more than 80 of which had already been lying at Plymouth. More were on the way there. The ships were left idle in the Sound while the rest of the requisitioned fleet was ordered to the Downs. Nearly 4,500 men were making their way to Plymouth from all over England. The men were stopped on the roads and redirected to Kent. The date of Gaunt's embarkation, already some weeks late, had been put back to the middle of June. The army was eventually carried to Calais in relays by a small fleet requisitioned at the East Coast ports and about 100 vessels chartered by the English government's agents in Holland, Zeeland, and Flanders. Shiploads of equipment and supplies followed. Trains of carts, great quantities of tenting, mobile grain mills and ovens, and bridging equipment. The most difficult question for Edward's ministers was what to do about Jean de Montfort once the Breton campaign had been abandoned. He was burning to get back to his duchy to support the hard-pressed garrison still holding out for him. He had also promised Neville to relieve him in Brest. John determined to raise an army of his own. His plan was to embark the men at Plymouth and Dartmouth on the ships that had been requisitioned for John of Gaunt. His recovery of the honor of Richmond in the previous year meant that he had dilapidated but potentially valuable assets in England against which he could borrow to finance the project. At first, Edward's government was willing to support him. They agreed to let him recruit 600 men-at-arms and 400 archers in England. They made a large grant towards his expenses and lent him £6,000. Neville lent £2,000 more out of his own pocket. Then suddenly, on about June the 10th, 1373, the whole project was cancelled. The reason is not recorded, but the likelihood is that the English government was one unable to agree to terms with the Duke for the reoccupation of his duchy. For the truth was that their interests were directly opposed. John wanted to be reconciled to his subjects, whereas Edward III's ministers wanted to obtain military control of the peninsula. So John was forced to drop his plans to return to Brest, and his strength was added to John of Gaunt's army, probably against his wishes. He was destined to pass the next few months marching through France in Gaunt's shadow. The job of relieving Brest was assigned to the Earl of Salisbury. Now, inside the castle of Brest, Neville and Knowles knew little or nothing about what the heck was going on in England. They did not know that the Duke of Brittany had been diverted to Calais, or that the Earl of Salisbury's fleet was being prepared in Southampton to relieve them. Their men had exhausted their stores and their hopes. By July 1373, they were reduced to eating their horses. On July the 6th, the garrison entered into a conditional surrender agreement with Bertrand de Guesclin, in a form which had now become conventional. A truce was agreed for the area around Brest, which would allow the garrison to resupply itself. The fortress was to be abandoned a month later on August the 6th, unless by then the Duke of Brittany had appeared in person with enough men to hold his own against the French army on open ground outside the gates of the town. The Bretons in the garrison were to be pardoned and allowed to keep their lands, while the English were given safe conduct to go wherever they wished with everything they had. To secure their performance of these promises, the English commanders delivered 6 hostages and furnished undertakings of 6 or more to surrender if they were called for. While he waited for the month to pass, Bertrand de Guesclin occupied his men by raiding the Channel Islands. He captured and briefly occupied the lower wards of the coastal fortress at Gorey on Jersey while the garrison held out from the keep. He then attacked Guernsey, which was virtually undefended, and seized the dilapidated fortifications of Castle Cornet. The inhabitants were obliged to enter into a patès agreement to pay protection money to the constable. Crops, villages, and farm buildings were also completely devastated, that the king's revenue there yielded almost nothing for years afterwards. Well, the Earl of Salisbury sailed out of Southampton with a relief force for Brest towards the end of July 1373. After joining the ships of the Western Admiralty at sea, his fleet comprised more than 50 vessels with nearly 3,000 soldiers on board and several shiploads of stores. When the fleet entered the great roadstead at Brest, it was received with ecstatic joy by the garrison. Salisbury's own joy must have been soured when he saw the terms of the conditional surrender agreement. The place had not been relieved in the manner required because John de Montfort was not there in person. Faced with this unexpected difficulty, the English decided to repudiate their agreement with the constable. Their pretext was a series of minor disputes about the truce around the town, which they said the French had failed to observe. On August 4, 1373, Neville wrote to the French commanders in the name of the 3 captains who had sealed the agreement, declaring that since they had received no satisfactory answer on these points, they considered they were no longer bound to surrender. They demanded the return of the hostages in French hands. Meanwhile, preparations were made to defend Brest. The stores were unloaded from ships, artillery was distributed about the walls, and bows and arrows and cords amongst the archers. The French were outraged. On August the 6th, the day appointed for a surrender, Bertrand de Guesclin, fresh from his conquests in the Channel Island, appeared before the town with the whole French army in Brittany, about 3,000 men. They found Neville's garrison and Salisbury's relief army drawn up in their lines in the front of the gates. The numbers on each side were roughly matched, but neither was willing to be drawn into a battle. Most of the English were equipped for service at sea and had no horses. As for the French, they didn't care to lose the advantage of the defense by attacking an enemy in prepared positions beneath their own walls. After a few days, the French army withdrew. The Earl of Salisbury's men boarded their ships in the second week of August and returned to England, leaving Neville to defend the place with a normal wartime garrison, probably no more than 200 men, which was periodically resupplied from England. The 6 English hostages in French hands were left to their fate. They became prisoners of war and held in harsh conditions for 4 years until Neville was eventually persuaded to pay the £4,500 for their release from his own pocket. For Jean de Montfort and Edward III, the whole affair had probably been worth the effort. John never settled his debt to Neville, and Brest was destined to remain in English occupation for almost another 20 years. But we're not over with 1373 yet. Now, the sources for this: The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption.